Welcome to On Mic with Jordan Rich, a chance to meet fascinating performers and creative types from a number of avenues, voiceover, broadcasting, the written word, acting, music, and so much more. Today, my chat with a well-known Boston media personality, David Bieber. He's a rock historian who worked for 16 years at WBCN, one of the premier rock stations in the nation. And then he worked another 19 years around the corner at the Boston Phoenix newspaper and radio station WFNX. David has become celebrated for his amazing collection, his rock and pop culture archives, with pieces numbering in the thousands.
This land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
In my conversation with him, we'll touch on an upcoming show April 18th at the Box Center's Wilbur Theater. It's the Folk and Americana Music Series, featuring the music of the Guthrie family and more. And on display in the theater will be many of these artistic pieces that relate directly to the music. By the way, you can go to boxcenter.org for much more on that. That's bochcenter.org. David Bieber really does offer us a blast from the past. Well, here we are talking to the man who has more great stuff than anybody on this planet, I think. And David, it's a pleasure to welcome you to my podcast.
Well, thank you, Jordan. It's great to be here and share a couple of toys and trinkets and artifacts with you.
And we can do so through the magic of audio. Before we get to the huge array of goodies that you've collected and amassed, really, the fact that you worked in radio, as I said in the introduction, the fact that you worked in radio really allowed you to meet some amazing people, didn't it?
Oh, everyone from David Bowie to Brian Wilson, the list could go on forever. Lou Reed, Iggy Pop, the Grateful Dead, I rode the bus with them. So there are so many fabulous encounters that radio allows you to have. And I was involved for 16 years at WBCN as the Creative Services Director, 19 years at the Boston Phoenix and WFNX as the Director of Special Projects. And that the day job allowed me to acquire many wonderful items that were promotional items that were created by record companies, movie companies, museums. And I saved all these things from becoming part of the landfill because ultimately, when the day was over, a new item came along the next day, and yesterday's was just old papers.
I kept thinking about that when I was thinking about chatting with you. The fact is today, so many things are ephemeral. They're not really there. They're virtual. They exist in the digital realm. They don't exist on paper. It was a good time to do what you did, wasn't it?
It really was. Plus, there was a very fierce competition that Warner Brothers Records would be competing with Columbia Records to see who could come up with the most creative items for in-store, record store window displays. And they would just do magical, wonderful, creative items. One thing that I found recently was from Alice Cooper's 1972 Schools Out album, an 8-foot inflatable yellow pencil.
Those promotional gimmicks, at the time they might have seemed silly, but as a budding collector, did you say, I've got to keep this? This has value somewhere along the line in the future.
Well, it was just that you were right there in the moment, and if you didn't grab it and put it in a box and put it away and save it for that rainy day, that someday that you hope comes, then it would be gone. Where would you find it? There was no internet. There was no way to reclaim what you. All it was a vision in your head of someday, you know, I'll find it again. But you know, that's too difficult. Why not just grab it while it's in your midst?
Right now, David, in terms of the names you mentioned, you dropped a few: the Bowies and the Lou Reeds. Did stuff come directly from these people themselves, or was it mainly from their promoters and so forth? I mean, do you have things that you treasure because David Bowie might have given you something directly?
Well, the easiest thing that you can get while you're in the presence is a photograph of you with the person. That is kind of a validation of the fact that, B, you get an album or two or 12 autographed by the person. And that becomes a kind of lasting reminder. And if there wasn't a photographer present, somebody always had one of these antique, now Polaroid cameras, where you have an instant image with 60 seconds while you floated around in the air waiting for the image to dry.
You quickly became known in the industry and in the radio circles as the guy who's got the collection, right? Was this something that you sought out early on, or did it just sort of develop because of the stuff you were amassing as you went along?
Well, it was an evolution, but the more times I was requested for items, say, by the Boston Globe, for example, I would say, you don't even have to pay me, just give me a little credit line, David Bieber Archives, on the side of the image, whether it was a Boston Tea Party poster or a promotional picture of Bob Dylan, whatever it was, if they needed it and they didn't have that in their own photo file, or they needed graphics to accompany a feature article, then if I could provide it, and usually a friend of mine would be writing the article anyway, so it was just a full circle of let's connect the dots and make this happen.
From a historical point of view, though, the pop culture history is amazing, because your stuff goes all the way back, what, to the 50s or 60s?
Principally, that would be the beginning, but I would certainly never turn down a Walt Disney The Big Bad Wolf and Three Little Pigs game from the 1930s, or a Mickey Mouse watch from the 1930s or 40s. So I used to go to the Great Clearinghouse was the Revere Drive-In Flea Market in the 1950s, where people were legitimately cleaning out basements and attics, and they weren't selling counterfeit poisonous Chinese toothpaste, you know. And it was just a treasure trove of opportunities where parents were cleaning out their college students' rooms behind their children's back, and I would find wonderful things, you know, games, toys, albums, old radios, movie magazines, jukeboxes. Sometimes I look around my house and my warehouse and I say, how did I ever manage to move something like that?
You just mentioned the magic word, warehouse. It's one thing to have a house full of stuff. Tell me about how you store all of these hundreds of thousands of items.
I'm fortunate enough to have landed at the Norwood Space Center, which is in, of all places, Norwood. And I have 10,000 square feet where I am slowly opening and creating a retrieval system where I can have hands-on access to all of these things, because for years and, in fact, decades, they were on industrial shelves, shrink-wrapped and on pallets, unavailable, and it almost became a myth. You know, is there really a warehouse full of things? Because nobody ever saw it, including me. And then finally, a couple years ago, I came upon this wonderful developing community of artists. It's about 20 buildings on a campus in Norwood called the Norwood Space Center. And I'm able to finally open the boxes and do the Scrooge McDuck dive in the deep end.
I was just thinking of that final scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark, the famous warehouse scene where things get shelved and never seen again, but it's good to know that that's happening. In terms of the work you do now in sharing the archival material with others, let's talk first of all about what's happening April 18th in Boston at the Bock Center. That's B-O-C-H, Bock Center. And there's a show all about American folk music. And what are some of the items that'll be on display then?
Well, I mean, it's actually at the Schubert Theater, which is part of the Bock Center, and it's Wednesday, April 18th, 7:30, and it's the beginning of an ongoing folk and Americana series, which will be held with some regularity at the Schubert, and the focus and the attention will be on Woodstock-based musicians, as well as complemented by guest appearances and some local Boston musicians, solo performers, special guests. But we'll also be drawing upon some of the things from my own David Bieber archives, some great items from going back to the 50s and 60s, Newport Folk Festival. I've got some photographs, authentic photographs of Janis Joplin at Newport in 1969. I've got the movie poster from the Martin Scorsese film The Last Waltz, which was the final band tour and performance out in San Francisco. I've got Tom Rush live at the Unicorn Club in Boston, lots of Club 47 and Passim. schedules and artifacts, and a lot of it plays off of the performers who will be at the Schubert on April 18th, including the Wait Band, which is a group of musicians who have had interplay with original members of the band, including Levon Helm and Garth Brooks, and members of third and fourth generation Guthrie family, descendants from Woody Guthrie and Arlo Guthrie, and then also up-and-coming band The Mammals. And so all three of those bands will be playing on Wednesday the 18th. But, you know, the idea is to really celebrate folk and Americana music, and the idea is also that a lot of it originated and got a very strong foothold in the Boston-Cambridge area in the 1950s and 1960s. So we're going full circle and trying to bring a lot of the items that were original to that era and showcase it to the people who would be interested in what that world looked like then and how the music sounds today.
And to that end, I know in January, I believe, you had a special on Janis Joplin, also at the Bach Schubert, and the 75th birthday of Janis Joplin, which is really mind-blowing. But what would be an example of the kinds of items you brought then?
Oh, I mean, Janis was sadly one of the members of the 27 Club of the musicians who died unexpectedly and far too early at age 27, and that club includes Janis, Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison, Amy Winehouse, Brian Jones, Kurt Cobain, all gone at 27. But for Janis, it was coincidentally the performance of a night with Janis Joplin was on Friday, January 19th, which would have been her 75th birthday. Wow. And the things that I brought in were everything from vintage posters, the psychedelic era, to promo photos from Columbia Records, to actual sheets of U.S. postage stamps that celebrated her life. And we had books and records. I even had a Korean version of Pearl that probably was brought back by an Army member who was serving in Korea in the 60s. Just things that we had great display cases, and it was fascinating and very heartening for me to see the people who were appreciating the concert then spend 15, 20, 25 minutes looking at the display cases and looking at the blow-ups of Janis with great appreciation, because it was an excellent compliment to the full-length performance that had just occurred.
There's one thing to collect and be an amazing archivist, but I think sharing your material with the world is really kind of cool. And I'd love you to talk about the Verb Hotel, which is the old Fenway Motor Lodge for those who live in the area, in the Boston area. And that's a terrific concept. How did you get involved with that? And first of all, describe what it is.
Well, the Verb Hotel is really a tribute to and a celebration of Boston music, Boston media, and Boston pop culture. And a lot of these performers and writers and just publications came out of the Fenway. As a matter of fact, the Howard Johnson Motor Hotel was right next door to the WBCN studios. And right across the street was David Minahan's Woolly Mammoth Studio. And around the corner, all the clubs on Lansdowne Street. And around a different corner was the Boston Phoenix and WFNX. So, you know, down the street were rehearsal studios where the Pierce 30-foot glass tower now stands. So I was connected by Stephen Mindich, who was the owner of the Boston Phoenix, to Steve Samuels, who is the owner of the Verb Hotel. And at first it was going to be a teardown. It was just going to be a generic eight-story hotel. But at the last minute, Steve Samuels decided, nope, I want to kind of do something unique, and let's preserve the bones and the skeleton of the old Motor Inn, and let's dress it with artifacts, and that's where I came into play. And so everything that's in there is original, it's authentic, old Boston Tea Party posters, performance poster of the Clash at the Cape Cod Coliseum, along with tickets. There's handwritten biographies by members of the Cars, Rick Ocasek, Ben Orr, Elliot Easton, all wrote down their own story, tore it out of a three-ring binder and gave it to me. And we do regular showcases of new items. We have book readings over at Hojoko, the adjacent restaurant. And it just brings a lot of both contemporary and historical pop sensibility to the ever-growing Fenway neighborhood.
By the way, people can read some nice pieces about that and you at your website, David Bieber Archives, and Bieber is B-I-E-B-E-R, davidbieberarchives.com. I'm going to end with the most impossible question to probably answer, but what the hell, I'll give it a shot. And I'm not going to suggest that you have to do this, but if you had the chance to go to a desert island for, say, 6 months just to chill, and we were allowing you to take three items from your amazing collection, is it even possible to hone down which three you might want to take for sentimental purposes?
Sentimental purposes, probably take a poster from the Boston Tea Party, where in 1 month for $2.50, $3.50, and $4.50, and that's with a decimal point, not $250, but $2.50, that you could see three nights of Led Zeppelin, three nights of The Who with Ross Anarol and Kirk opening, Jeff Beck with Rod Stewart singing.
Wow.
The Allman Brothers opening for the Velvet Underground. That would be one item. Another item would be, probably a Beatles window display where the heads move like the Liverpool lads shook their heads after performing a song. This was a big, probably 3 by 4 foot window display that was issued in 1964 to record stores. And the reason that I got it was that the record store owner said, oh, you can take this. I don't need it because they're sending me another, because basically this one was sent with two heads of George and no head of John.
That's what makes it special. Come on. And what's the third item? Do you have one more?
Probably the third one would be maybe the artwork of the Trojan horse that I drew in third grade.
Excellent. Boy, I didn't think you'd answer it as adeptly, but I should have known who I'm dealing with here. That's a great, great answer. Well, congratulations on amassing it all, and not only that, but putting it in some semblance of order so that the rest of the world can see it. When will the space actually be open, and will it be open to the public or for private viewing?
Well, at the temporarily, until it gets organized, it will be private, but a lot of it will be displayed at the Norwood Space Center the end of April, April 28th and 29th, and then the next weekend, the first weekend in May, at the Norwood Space Center. We'll be celebrating Art Week Boston, and so in several of the buildings I will be having displays and exhibits, and that's the great thing, is that under those circumstances I can share these items and artifacts with the public. I'll be there. I can tell people the backstory and just really celebrate our culture and our history. And I'm still collecting things today, so it's an ongoing, you know.
Well, you're a legend. I'm sure you've been told that before, but I'll tell you once again for what you've done. And I just want to end with this. I mean, this is talk about legacy and saving things that for many would have been tossed. I think that means a lot more than some might even give you credit for. So thank you for doing what you're doing.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate it. And, you know, somehow genetically I picked up that urge to preserve, and it has never stopped.
You've been listening to On Mic with Jordan Rich, a podcast produced by Chart Productions. Just click the Jordan Rich podcast link at chartproductions.com for more. Please subscribe, download, rate, and review us on Apple and any other podcast platform. Hey, it's great to be with you as always. Thanks for listening. Have a terrific day.